Good morning, Aloha Pa. Nice to see you all again. How is everyone? Did you all have some coffee or tea or something? Managed to get through this session now. Thank you. Continuing with our survey of various aspects of the life of the Bab, the services of the Bab. We've moved through his mission, his declaration, his rank, his station, his titles, his person, his ministry, and something of his writings where we ended up talking about the order of Baha'u'llah that he's mentioned and that Dr. Saidi elaborated very beautifully on yesterday. I remember him hearing from pilgrims and seeing in pilgrim notes how Shoghi Effendi simplified the truth that he wanted us all to understand, that every stage of the cause is a single organic activity. We're not to be separated and say, you know, the Bab came and he had a certain thing, but then Baha'u'llah came and he revised it and fixed it a bit, and then Abdu'l-Baha came and he had a different direction, and finally Shoghi Effendi took us off to administration, and it's a totally wrong understanding of the cause. And Shoghi Effendi, particularly in the introduction, the foreword to God Passes By, he stresses the singularity of the cause of God. You know, it started from this primal point and it's going to go for 500,000 years, and it's all one process. And sometimes along the way we think we've gotten lost, or there's a challenge of new understandings that gradually then as we proceed we see, you know, Baha'u'llah is in charge of the cause. And he would summarize these stages, which are of course described in detail in God Passes By. He said, for example, that the cause of God is a seed that God has planted in the world, and it's been nurtured by the blood of 20,000 martyrs. And now this young plant is growing, putting out its branches, its leaves. And that, he said, corresponds to the heroic age of the faith and to the beginnings of the formative age. When this allegorical tree bears flower, when it flowers, when it blossoms, he said, that's the world order of Baha'u'llah. And when those blossoms become fruit, that's the Baha'i civilization of the future. That was one example he gives. It simplifies it. It's in his writings too, but more elaborately. Then the second example he gave is that the cause is like a child that's been planted in the womb of the world and nurtured again with the blood of the martyrs. And it's very significant, this question of how sacrifice, there's different stages of sacrifice in the cause where things are moved forward because of that level of giving of people's lives, of their readiness to sacrifice themselves. So he says, then this allegorical child is growing in the womb of the world. And it's an embryo still. The administrative order in this stage is like an embryo. And there's a few kicks and jerks and things that happen along the way. It's still developing. When this allegorical child, he says, is born, that's the beginning of the world order of Baha'u'llah. But it's a baby, it's a child. When it grows to adulthood, that's the world civilization of Baha'u'llah. Interesting to think in terms of how we're going to be moving, how humanity will be moving through these various degrees. Important, it seems to me, it's quite important that we get as much as we can the image and order of the writings of the faith into our consciousness, that we remove by stages sometimes, acquired knowledge, or at least our dependence on acquired knowledge. Do you remember in the passage about the seeker and the egon, Baha'u'llah says you have to cleanse the heart of the least remnant of acquired knowledge. Now, acquired knowledge is mostly what we're doing from childhood on, until we perhaps have the spiritual awakening in the cause and realize that the Word of God has its own structure and it needs to mentally structure us. We need to absorb the writings. The hidden words are very important. Abdu'l-Bahá says, every day read the hidden words, so that the order, this divine order, begins to establish itself in us. You remember in the hidden words he says how it's important to see with your own eyes and not with the eyes of others. Very strange. Very important. He says that's the only way you're going to be independent. And then it's through the Word of God that we gain this divine understanding and vision. And it replaces gradually our dependence on understanding borrowed knowledge from others, which actually in the Egon is not very nicely characterized as satanic knowledge. It's something we borrow and steal from each other, and then I'm a doctor of so-and-so, you know? Have we made any discoveries, or we just have surveyed the whole activity of human beings before us and absorbed them? At the same time, there's the other side of that. The Baha'u'llah says we should fully investigate and understand all the arts and sciences. But the question of how to do it in a detached way and how to see it with an eye that's independent and how gradually to recognize the significance of what Baha'u'llah says when he says that if you don't see me with my own eye, you will never behold me. Now, what might we suppose that would mean? Again, in my own mind, this comes back to absorbing the writings and vision of Baha'u'llah, understanding how he sees the world, how this new order of that we've been hearing about is appearing. And the necessity of concentrating on Baha'u'llah, on the creative words of God. I've seen several letters from Shoghi Effendi where he's written to new believers that have written him. And he says he hopes that you will find ample leisure time to study the writings of Baha'u'llah. And in one letter he suggests he hopes you'll find a couple hours a day to study the words of God. I wonder what kind of cause of God we would have if we were all studying the Word of God a couple hours a day. I say to myself, oh, what a good idea. I'm retired, I can do that, you know? And I start right off until I fall asleep about 10 minutes later. I get drowsy. I think, oh, I got to have some coffee or do something else. It's a challenge, but we need to acquire the taste for doing more of that and surveying things. And perhaps I remember Howard Colby Ives was giving suggestions to the early believers about taking notes as you're reading the tablets of Baha'u'llah, the writings of Baha'u'llah. Take notes of things that seem particularly significant to you, because we're constantly evolving and changing. And so the verses mean different things to us at different times. Like Shoghi Effendi said, one of the Westerners, he asked if they'd read the Egon at the Pilgrim House, and the Westerner said, yes, I've done it. Shoghi Effendi smiled. He didn't say anything, but the next pilgrim group, he said, we had a pilgrim here who said they'd done the Egon. He said, you can't ever do the Egon, you know. It's a constant challenge. And it changes before our eyes because we're changing. It's the source of all things. It encompasses the whole reality, you know. It's a major doctrinal work of the whole revelation. So we got to his writings of the Bab. We're in our survey now. And this morning we're going to start off looking at Shoghi Effendi's elaboration on the covenant of the Bab. And there's this so much emphasis, not in the earliest writings of the Bab, the first few years is not so much emphasis, but later on, the whole focus of everything is him whom God shall make manifest. And the whole revelation of the Bab, he submits it to Baha'u'llah to accept what he will. And even he says, I've elaborated all kinds of laws and everything so that when him whom God shall make manifest comes, he will be free to chant on the branches of the trees of eternity his holy melodies. Verily, verily, I am God and there is no God but me. And he won't be bothered with anything else. But he submits it to Baha'u'llah. And Baha'u'llah then adapts certain of the laws and teachings of the Bab for his own dispensation. Fascinating here. Unlike the prophets gone before him, these are the words of the guardian, whose covenants were shrouded in mystery. Unlike Baha'u'llah, whose clearly defined covenant was incorporated in a specially written testament and designated by him as the Book of My Covenant, the Bab chose to intersperse his Book of Laws, the Persian Bayan, with unnumbered passages, some designedly obscure, mostly indubitably clear and conclusive, in which he fixes the date of the promised revelation, extols its virtues, asserts its preeminent character, assigns to it unlimited powers and prerogatives, and tears down every barrier that might be an obstacle to its recognition. You think in terms of this, the Bab, the whole purpose of his revelation is to prepare humanity for the coming of Baha'u'llah. And the coming of Baha'u'llah is such an event that it has required a full manifestation of God to open the way, to clear the air, so to speak, for the coming of his own message. Baha'u'llah. He, verily, referring to the Bab in his Kitab-i-Badi, has stated, hath not fallen short of his duty to exhort the people of the Bayan and to deliver unto them his message. In no age or dispensation hath any manifestation made mention in such detail and in such explicit language of the manifestation destined to succeed him. That's in the second chapter of God Passes By. Later, the Guardian comments, the covenant which, despite the determined assaults launched against it, succeeded, unlike all previous dispensations, in preserving the integrity of the faith of its author and in paving the way for the advent of the one who was to be its center and object, had been firmly and irrevocably established. So it gives us a bit of the image of the impact of this covenant of the Bab with respect to our understanding of Baha'u'llah. The next aspect that I wanted to explore a little through the writings of the Guardian is the relationship between the Bab and Baha'u'llah. There have been rumors in the Baha'i community that they met, particularly while the Bab was on his way to Maku. But Abdu'l-Bahá refutes in the tablet that they never met physically. Of course, spiritually, they were communing with each other all the time, and there was constant correspondence back and forth, some of which, not all of which, has been examined yet. Very interesting, this point of view. Shoghi Effendi takes up this theme of the co-identity, of the Bab and Baha'u'llah, in the dispensation, when he is laying out the station of Abdu'l-Bahá, which the friends had in the West had generally misunderstood. There were pilgrims that came in 1932, 33, and they asked the Guardian, they spoke to the Guardian about the station of Abdu'l-Bahá as the coming of Christ, as the return of Jesus. And he said, this is not what Abdu'l-Bahá has taught, And this understanding is a misunderstanding in the West. Friends have to move beyond that. And they said, oh, Shoghi Effendi, if we say that you spoke to us like this, they'll say that we lack spiritual capacity, and therefore the Guardian veiled the station of Abdu'l-Bahá from us, because we've seen Abdu'l-Bahá, and we know he's a manifestation of God. Okay. He says, this is blasphemous. You can't say this. This is directly contradicts the words of Abdu'l-Bahá. Abdu'l-Bahá is the supreme exemplar. Now, the other morning we read from the will, where he defines the position of the Bab and the position of Baha'u'llah, and then he said, all others are servants. Okay, Abdu'l-Bahá is the supreme servant of the faith. And I think, in a sense, you know, you apply this verse from Islam that Baha'u'llah quotes in the Epistle to the Son of the Wolf, where he says, the essence of servitude, the matter of servitude, the essence of servitude is divinity. If you serve properly, you become selfless and you become the image of the divine powers, at least to the extent of your capacities. So we're called to that role, and Abdu'l-Bahá becomes our exemplar. Very interesting, you know, we look around, maybe some of us would say, well, I'm doing a lot more for the faith than anybody else. I travel, I give more talks, I tutor more Ruhi books, I do this, I do that. You know, we kind of look at each other and say, not too bad, you know, I mean, my community and so on. This is a total mistake. We need to compare with the exemplar. Exemplar is there. As long as we keep comparing ourselves with Abdu'l-Bahá, we should be in a fairly clear position of obeisance, of submission, of nothingness. So the more we know about Abdu'l-Bahá's life, the better we're able to realize our own is a faint, if anything, a faint, we hope, a faint glimmering of that power and blessing. In this argument, in this discussion that Shoghi Effendi has introduced in the dispensation, he says it would be more correct, this is after saying that Baha'u'llah and Abdu'l-Bahá had a spiritual identity together, it would be more correct and in consonance with the established principles of Baha'u'llah and the Bab if, instead of maintaining this fictitious identity with reference to Abdu'l-Bahá, we regard the forerunner and the founder of our faith as identical in reality, a truth which the text of the Surah Haykal unmistakably affirms. He quotes, had the primal point, the Bab, been someone else beside me, as ye claim, is Baha'u'llah's explicit statement, and had attained my presence, verily he would have never allowed himself to be separated from me, but rather we would have had mutual delights with each other in my days. He who now voiceth the word of God, Baha'u'llah again affirms, is none other except the primal point, who hath once again been made manifest. He is, he thus refers to himself in a tablet addressed to one of the letters of the living, the same as the one who appeared in the year 60. This verily is one of his mighty signs. Now we're talking about the station of the unity of the manifestation of God, it seems to me, where the Bab and Baha'u'llah are identical. Who, again Baha'u'llah pleads in the Surah Dam, will arise to secure the triumph of the primal beauty revealed in the countenance of his succeeding manifestation? This amazing statements of Baha'u'llah with relation to this. And finally, referring to the revelation proclaimed by the Bab, Baha'u'llah conversely characterizes it as my own previous manifestation. Those of you who have perhaps read the commentary of Abdu'l-Bahá, Tafsir Kuntum Kansam Makfiyan, He speaks there about the four stations of love that we're quite familiar with, and he adds another, a fifth one, and he elaborates it quite beautifully. And before too long, you will have an official translation of this tablet in Bhaya literature in English. And he says the fifth love is the love that exists between the manifestations of God. Who can imagine what a... So bear that in mind. After the four, there is this fifth one that's coming along in elaboration that you'll be able to understand. In surveying the various passages and documents with respect to the impact of the Bab on society and on where we are in our present evolution of the cause, there are several very key messages which I'd like to share parts of this morning. One is towards the, in the retrospect and prospect that takes the last chapter of God Passes By of The Guardian. The Guardian in, I think it's what looks like one sentence here, you know, sometimes he does a whole page of one sentence. He's taking us from a handful of students of the Shaky School all the way to the coming world order of Baha'u'llah, or describing how that has evolved. Now, obviously, he's taking account of this in 1944. So the numbers are not what they are today. They've multiplied immensely. And you're familiar, you can find statistics about the cause in general, number of languages in which the faith exists, the number, value of properties worldwide of the cause, the number of countries where the faith has penetrated. All this is multiplied terrifically since this survey. But the survey does present to us this motion, the movement from this handful of students until we have the dawning of a world faith, a world religion on humanity. A handful of students belonging to the Shaky School sprung from the Isna Sharia sect of Shia Islam. Isna Sharia means the Twelvers, those followers of Shia who follow 12 imams. There's other Shia sects that follow fewer imams. They got stuck along the way and didn't move forward. But we are the inheritors, if you will, of the Isna Sharia, of the Twelver sect of Shia Islam. A handful of students had, in consequence of the operation of this process, he's just been describing the divine process of the coming of the cause of God, had been expanded and transformed into a world community. Now he goes characterizing, what is this world community? Closely knit, clear of vision, alive, consecrated by the sacrifice of no less than 20,000 martyrs. A word which the Guardian has given us, which we haven't seen very much in the past. He said the cause is supranational. Not international, but supranational. Non-sectarian, it's non-political, claiming the status and assuming the functions of a world religion spread over five continents and the islands of the sea, with ramifications extending over 60 sovereign states and 17 dependencies. This is the calculation in 44. Equipped with a literature and translated and broadcast in 40 languages, so it's over 820 now, exercising control over endowments representing several million dollars, recognized by a number of governments in both East and West already at that time through the incorporations, national and local Baha'i incorporations, integral in aim and outlook, possessing no professional clergy, professing a single belief, following a single law, animated by a single purpose, organically united through an administrative order, divinely ordained, and unique in its features. including within its orbit representatives of all the leading religions of the world, of various classes and races, faithful to its civil obligations, conscious of its civic responsibilities, as well as of the perils confronting the society of which it forms a part, sharing the sufferings of that society and confident in its own high destiny. Friend, what a guardian we had that it could create in one sentence a vision of the whole of the first Baha'i century and where we're going. It's really, you can find that right in the third paragraph of the chapter Retrospect and Prospect in your rereading of God Passes By. The next document I'd like to call attention to was the next important anniversary after 44, which of course represented the birth of the faith and the motivation for the Guardian having written God Passes By, was the anniversary of the martyrdom, the 100th anniversary of the martyrdom of the Bab in 1950. July 1950, Shoghi Effendi sent a message to the American Baha'i community, which then became communicated all over the world. In this, he focuses on different aspects of the Bab, the energies that he'd released, what's producing here? How is it producing here? And so on. So we're going to look a little bit at those. You'll see how this vast influence of the Bab's initial revelation, how it then greatly enriched and accelerated with the revelation of Baha'u'llah, has produced all these changes. It's also the Guardian reveals something of his own character and emotion here, which doesn't always happen. Moved to share, it's in Cablese, friends. Some of the words are missing because the Guardian used this special language, which actually has its own drama to it because it's so terse and tight to convey his messages and also to save some money. We don't put all the ofs and the does and all of these things. Moved to share with assembled representatives of American Baha'i community gathered beneath the dome of the most holy house of worship in the Baha'i world. Why is Wilmette the most holy house of worship in the Baha'i world? That's exactly because Abdul Baha himself laid its cornerstone. It made it the mother temple of the world. It constitutes a house of worship, the mother house of worship, the holiest house of worship in the world. But also, the Guardian said, and it's a shrine because Abdul Baha was there. And where Baha'u'llah and Abdul Baha have been and events have taken place, all those are potentially shrines. So he says, move to share with those gathered their feelings of profound emotion evoked by this historic occasion of the worldwide commemoration of the first centenary of the martyrdom of the Blessed Bab, prophet and herald of the faith of Baha'u'llah, founder of the dispensation marking the culmination of the 6,000-year Adamic cycle, inaugurator of the 5,000-century Baha'i cycle. You look how the Bab is right on the cusp between the two. He closes the one and he opens the other. Very significantly, he says, the conjunction of these two prophetic cycles, the cycle of prophecy and the cycle of fulfillment, of which we're now launched into. Poignantly call to mind the circumstances attending the last act consummating the tragic ministry of the master hero of the most sublime drama in the religious annals of mankind, signalizing the most dramatic event of the most turbulent period of the heroic age of the Baha'i dispensation. The reading and study of the Guardian is the only source of getting all these events in their proper relationship with everything that's happened in the past, and in understanding their different value and importance in the unfoldment of the heroic age, in the unfoldment of this new dispensation. Destined, this sacrifice of the Bab, destined to be recognized by posterity as the most precious, momentous sacrifice in the world's spiritual history. Posterity. Humanity is going to come to see how important this martyrdom of the Bab was. Recall the peerless tributes paid to his memory by the founder of the faith, acclaiming him monarch of God's messengers, the primal point round whom the realities of all the prophets circle in adoration. Profoundly stirred by the memories of the agonies he suffered, the glad tidings he announced, the warnings he uttered, the forces he set in motion, the adversaries he converted, the disciples he raised up, the conflagrations he precipitated, and the legacy he left of faith and courage, the love he inspired. Again, he brings himself back into the picture. He says, acknowledge with bowed head, joyous, thankful heart, the successive, marvelous evidence of his triumphant power in the course of the 100 years elapsed since the last crowning act of his meteoric ministry. Now he begins to outline. He's talked about these evidences of his marvelous power. He begins to enumerate them. The creative energies released at the hour of the birth of his revelation, endowing mankind with the potentialities of the attainment of maturity, are deranging during the present transitional age the equilibrium of the entire planet. As the inevitable prelude to the consummation in world unity of the coming of age of the human race. Friends, I saw some diary notes of Keith Ransom Kaler, great heroine of the faith, who the Guardian sent to defend the cause to Iran, where she was spent some months before she fell ill and passed away in Isfahan. And he named her posthumously, said she was both a martyr and a hand of the cause. In her notes, Shoghi Effendi spoke very candidly, and she also responded candidly. She said, he asks her at one point about, after talking about the cause and how it's developing and so on, he said, do you think that the kingdom of God on earth depends on the Baha'is and what they do? And she said, yes, she thought that was the way it was. He said, not at all. They can go completely off direction. The energies released by the Bab and Baha'u'llah will bring about the kingdom of God on earth with this or without us. She says, then why are you pushing us so much? He says, that's for you. That's for you. That's the blessing for the Baha'is, that they stir themselves and form a conscious community that will blend together with the effects of the greater plan of God that the Bab and Baha'u'llah are carrying out with the humanity. We should realize this is going on with us or without us. It's coming. Then he said that, I think we're going to have time in the course of this, and with the permission of the committee, to go into the subject of divine confirmations and how that works in our lives as teachers. He said that the blessings that the Baha'u'llah has brought, that the Bab and Baha'u'llah have brought, for example, in an act of teaching the faith, if there were 10 portions of reward for that or advantage, he said 9 of them go to the teacher and 1 goes to the seeker, the listener. There's something very essential and dynamic to our participating at a certain intense level in propagating the cause. That's the opportunity open to us, particularly at this period. We'll talk about that some more afterwards. So, he's outlining these creative energies. You know, in another place, in another message of the Guardian, if I can interrupt a little here, Shoghi Effendi says, these energies are becoming crystallized into visible agencies. They're invisible spiritual energies released by the Bab and then reinforced by Baha'u'llah, are crystallizing during this formative period of the faith into the agencies for the distribution of his light to all humanity. And they convert into a number of processes. And then in one of the messages to Latin America, and by the way, have you seen there's a book of the messages of the Shoghi Effendi to Latin America, which is really the last major collection of messages of the Guardian that hadn't been previously published, called A Fire with the Vision, the messages of God, the messages of the Guardian to Latin America. For the whole period right to the end of his passing, but particularly during the first 7-year plan. And there he talks about this processes of the administrative order, which are the result of these energies released by the Bab and Baha'u'llah. And he names about 30 of them there. And they're the things you would imagine, like the propagation of the faith, the consolidation of the new believers, the multiplication of enrollments, the establishment of Baha'i groups, the establishment of Baha'i local assemblies, the incorporation of local assemblies, the acquisition of local endowments, the translations and publication and dissemination of literature in Spanish and whatever language, part of those processes, and so on and so on, establishment of local Baha'i funds, and you can make this list and you realize all this is the direct effect of these energies released by the Bab and Baha'u'llah. Quite fascinating. The other thing that also becomes fairly pointed in the Guardian's foreword to God Passes By is that all the problems humanity is facing right now are the result of our revelation. Not so much the result of the revelation as the result of the people ignoring the revelation, of rejecting the revelation. It immediately starts disintegrating everything that doesn't accept it. The Bab says, you know, his word is like light. It goes out. If it's received, it illumines the recipient. If it's rejected, it turns to fire. That's what we're seeing here in humanity now, this breaking down of all the old fixed ways that resisted the influence of the revelation. So he talks about that again, if I could repeat that phrase. Deranging during the present transitional age, that's the formative age of the faith, the equilibrium of the entire planet as the inevitable prelude to the consummation in world unity of the coming of age of the human race. you know, I'm hardly an interpreter of this, but from my, just the advantage of my own life and moving around in the world, you see how the aftermath, Shoghi Effendi makes a startling statement. He says that the result of slavery in the United States has meant that members of the black race participated in the carrying out of the goals of the divine plan of the master. Without that, it would never have happened. Another insight into the meaning of things as they evolve and change in our understanding. All these wars end up with refugees coming from different parts of the world to different places. South America is full of Japanese, and Brazil has Japanese immigrants, German immigrants, all these different stages in what happened in the Southeast Asia have come to the States and to Europe and so on. Baha'u'llah is mixing us all together as a result of some as a result of our misdeeds, the barbarity of our wars and everything, but out of that he's also creating another humanity. The prelude, inevitable prelude to the consummation in world unity of the coming of age of the human race. I must say, another personal comment is that when I became a Baha'i and we first talked about oneness of mankind and all the world should become like one country, it was like people said utopia. I don't hear that anymore. People think that's an interesting idea. They thought about it may be very hard to achieve, but the recognition that we're all one human race is becoming more and more the norm. I don't like it because I don't like these other people. That's another problem. But the recognition that we're all part of a human race. Oh, remember Nader Saidi, dear Nader, he one time revealed years ago, to my astonishment, the implications that he was seeing in the verse of Baha'u'llah, the earth is but one country and mankind its citizens. He said, you realize how revolutionary this is? Sounds, first time we heard it, thought, oh, that's so nice, I like that, feels good. But it also implies responsibilities on the part of all of us to become one country, and to provide for every citizen the same benefits, invoke in them the same responsibilities for upholding this oneness of the human race. So that the girl student in Ghana has the same health benefits and the same educational possibilities as the one in Japan or in Brazil. We haven't caught up with that yet. We have the have nations being nice to the have-nots, that actually they've, of course, gathered all their wealth from some of those guys. History is very interesting to observe. Show you if any wanted us to study sociology and history and the economics to understand some of these forces that are going on. After this creative energy, he focuses on the warnings. He says, the portentous but unheeded warnings addressed to kings, princes, ecclesiastics are responsible for the successive overthrow of 14 monarchies of East and West. This is more now since then, but this is 1944. The collapse of the institution of the caliphate. Who would have imagined that such an institution could disappear, and it disappeared so quickly? The virtual extinction of the Pope's temporal sovereignty. Well, most of us don't know enough about history maybe to realize that most of the northern Italian states were the country of the Pope. He was the king of those countries. He ruled them, not simply a spiritual leader, but his whole basis of land outside of the little Vatican City was reduced during the ministry of Baha'u'llah. The progressive decline in the fortunes of the ecclesiastical hierarchies of the Islamic, Christian, Jewish, Zoroastrian, and Hindu faiths. again, Dr. Saidi was pointing out to us what kind of a society this was, how everything was stacked in favor of the ecclesiastical order, how a commoner wouldn't be able to pronounce on some religious subject, much less a merchant from Shiraz, if you excuse him from suddenly appearing on the behalf of God and announcing a new revelation. It should have been Mujtahid so-and-so that did that. No, but it didn't work out that way. How the waning influence of these religious communities, these religious leaders on their communities, how it's changed also, even in our lifetimes. We see such a deterioration and more split up, and how many evangelical sects they have in the world. I think it's about 6,000 they've come up with now. It was about 600 when I first heard about it. The order. Now he brings the question of the order. The order eulogized and announced in his writings, this order of Baha'u'llah that we spoke about yesterday, whose laws Baha'u'llah subsequently revealed in the Most Holy Book, whose features Abdu'l-Bahá delineated in his testament, is now passing through its embryonic stage, through the emergence of the initial institutions of the world administrative order in the five continents of the globe. This is this fourth period that he outlines in God Passes By. After the three ministries of the three central figures, he goes on to the administrative order. He completely kind of obliterates his own role in it. He's animating it and inspiring everybody, but he puts the focus, he said, this is what the Baha'is are doing. Of course, this is what the garden is getting the Baha'is to do in reality, but he's very selfless in his presentation of it. You remember the passages, significant passages in Shoghi Effendi's writings, particularly in the dispensation, where he implies that Baha'u'llah is the father of this order and Abdu'l-Bahá is its mother, that through the interaction of the forces of Baha'u'llah in the mind of Abdu'l-Bahá, it produces the birth of this institutions, delineates their features, as does take place in the womb of the mother of the children that are generated by their father. All of that comes to birth now. It's growing, developing, but in an embryonic form during the time we exist now, whatever that exactly means. The clarion call. Another theme that Shoghi Effendi is picking up for this commemorative message. The clarion call sounded in the Qayyum al-Asma, summoning the peoples of the West to forsake their homes and proclaim his message. First chapter, first book of the Bab, he has the Western people with responsibilities to serve the cause of God. To forsake their homes and proclaim his message was nobly answered by the communities of the Western Hemisphere, headed by the valorous stalwart American believers, the chosen vanguard of the all-conquering, irresistibly marching army of the faith in the Western world. The embryonic faith, maturing 3 years after his martyrdom, traversing the period of infancy in the course of the heroic age of the faith, is now progressing towards maturity in the present formative age, destined to attain full stature in the golden age of the Baha'i dispensation. Lastly, the holy seed of infinite preciousness, holding within itself incalculable potentialities, representing the culmination of the centuries-old process of the evolution of humanity, through the energies released by the series of progressive revelations, starting with Adam and concluded by the revelation of the seal of the prophets, that would be Muhammad, marked by the successive appearance of the branches, leaves, buds, blossoms, and plucked after 6 brief years by the hand of destiny, ground in the mill of martyrdom. What an image he's giving us here. The seed, the bob becomes the seed that then is submitted to the mill of martyrdom and oppression, yielding the oil whose first flickering light cast upon the somber subterranean walls of the Seychelles of Tehran, with the intimation of Baha'u'llah's prophetic mission, whose fire gathered brilliance in Baghdad, shone in full resplendency in its crystal globe in Adrianople. And elsewhere he relates that to the proclamation to the kings that took place from that in those 5 years that Baha'u'llah was in Adrianople. In Europe, he mentions in one place that. First time we've had a prophet of God that we have any record of in Europe. Whose fire gathered brilliance in Baghdad and shone in full resplendency in its crystal globe in Adrianople. Whose rays warmed and illuminated the fringes of the American, European, Australian continents through the tender ministerings of the center of the covenant. Whose radiance is now overspreading the surface of the globe during the present formative age, whose full splendor is destined in the course of future millenniums to suffuse the entire planet. A little interruption, Shoghi Effendi has used various terms to describe these stages. He talks about the effusion of the light of God, the energies, effusion during the heroic age of the faith. Then he characterizes the diffusion of that light during this present formative period. Through the divine plan of Abdu'l-Bahá, Baha'is carried the light across the whole surface of the globe. But he describes a third stage to come, which was mentioned here briefly, suffusion, where the light has to suffuse and penetrate the life of society everywhere. And this now, you see, has been translated by the House of Justice into focus on local communities, into establishing the basis in clusters throughout the planet where the cause of God can grow steadily and influence society and influence social action in these communities. This is destined to continue, he said here, you know, for a long period in the coming millenniums. Again, returning to that thought yesterday that the Baha'i era, yes, will be no less than 1,000 years, but it might be thousands more than that. So he ends that picture with whose full splendor is destined in the course of future millenniums to suffuse the entire planet. Already, the crushing of this God-imbued kernel upon the anvil of adversity has ignited the first sparks of the holy fire latent within it, through the emergence of the firmly knit world-encompassing community, constituting no less than 2,500 centers established throughout 100 countries, representing over 30 races, extending as far north as the Arctic Circle and as far south as the Straits of the Magallanes, equipped with literature translated into 60 languages, possessing endowments nearing $10 million, This is now the 1950 count. We're still, you know, way ahead of that now. enriched through the erection of two houses of worship in the heart of the Asiatic and North American continents, and the stately mausoleum for the Bab raised in its world center. Consolidated through the incorporation of over 100 of its national and local assemblies, and reinforced through the proclamation of its independence in the East, its recognition in the West, eulogized by royalty, that would be Queen Marie, buttressed by 9 pillars, that was the number of national spiritual assemblies in 1950. That was increased to 12 with the launching of the World Crusade, and then consummated at the end of that with 56 for the election of the First Universal House of Justice. Sustaining the future structure of its supreme, these pillars sustaining the future structure of its Supreme Administrative Council, being the House of Justice, energized through the simultaneous prosecution of specific plans conducted under the aegis of its national councils, designed to enlarge the limits and extend the ramifications and consolidate the foundations of its divinely appointed administrative order over the surface of the entire planet. All of these, again, these figures need to be revised, but the topics that he's including here and having join in our vision of, again, the effect and impact of this holy, blessed Bab that's appeared in the world. How is all this going to reflect in our understanding and what we're able to communicate even partially to friends of the faith, to those that come into contact with these meetings we have to commemorate the bicentenary of the birth of the Bab, which is not really a birthday party. We have to see it in its consequences up to the time of this 200th anniversary, which we're commemorating. How to see the whole thing as a whole is a challenge for us, and these various things contribute to it. At the end of this message of the Guardian, and I'll conclude with this, I've paraphrased his appeal to the friends at that time, just eliminating a few of the specifics. You can go back and read the whole message. But I think the message in itself becomes an appeal to us on this occasion, at this early stages of our preparation now for the bicentenary of the birth of the Bab. I appeal on this solemn occasion, at this anxious hour in the fortunes of this travailing age, to the entire body of the believers to rededicate themselves and resolve, no matter how great the perils confronting their sister communities, however somber the situation facing both the cradle of the faith and its world center, however grievous the vicissitudes they themselves may eventually suffer, to hold aloft unflinchingly the torch of the faith impregnated with the blood of innumerable martyrs and transmit it unimpaired so that it may add luster to future generations destined to labor after them. You can find that, friends, in the book Citadel of Faith, around the page 80 of that book, to revisit this solemn appeal of the Guardian to all of us to keep aloft the torch of the faith with all of its radiance and beauty before the face of humanity and draw them towards the golden age of his cause. Thank you, friends.